There are days when I find it difficult just to move, to get up. Today is one of those days. I've had half my daily dose of painkillers this morning just to move. And so when I read this passage, it really speaks to me. It is really a very personal passage to me, to understand just what is happening to me. And I think it's an encouragement to all of us, because facing the decline of our physical bodies is something that is, I think, fairly difficult for most people in this world today. What is the nature of this body? Paul has a lot of descriptions throughout this passage describing this present body, what's it like. Firstly, he brings out that it's the outward body. This is the outward part of us as people. And the outward part is wasting away. So Paul says in verse 16, though outwardly we are wasting away. Now, perhaps for most of you who are young, the wasting hasn't really begun yet. But it will, don't worry. It's coming. In fact, when you actually look at the whole passage, this theme Paul picked up throughout the passage, and he kind of got diverted to speak about how the gospel is working within it. But if we go back to verse 7, Paul says, we have this treasure in jars of clay. Or the older versions put it, earthen vessels. Now, it's just a great picture of what our body is like. It is a jar of clay. And, of course, to us, I suppose, even that's a little bit exotic. You know what happens when you die? Mostly these days there's no space in the ground to bury you. So they stick you in a furnace and burn you down to ash, and then they grind up the bones and they put you in a porcelain earthenware jar. And Paul says, yeah, that's it. That's what this body really is. From the very start, it is the body made of dust, and it is decaying. It is going to die. Remember that earthenware pottery was the ancient world's equivalent of our plastic bucket. They didn't have plastic. They had just clay you would dig up and mould and fire in an oven. And it was the picture of the human body. It is momentary and temporary. It's constantly changing, but it is changing for the worse. Paul also then can use a number of other descriptions. In chapter 5, he says, so we know that if the earthly tent we live in is destroyed. And of course, we know that Paul's secular job, his kind of trained skill, was as a tent maker. And so making tents was something that he was very familiar with. And whenever there's a disaster anywhere in the world, the United Nations has prepared a whole bunch of provisions which are immediately available to fly in. And, of course, there is water and food and tents, because tents provide temporary shelter. And, of course, as time goes on, you don't want to live in a tent long term. You want to go back into some sort of permanent dwelling. And so Paul's illustration of this body as a tent is very apt to Paul's own personal experience. He recognises tents are just temporary shelters. It's not a place that you want to be in permanently. And then you go further down and you'll find chapter 5, verse 4, and he says, "For while we are in this tent, we groan." And he says it again in verse 2, that meanwhile we groan, longing to be clothed. Now, any of you who begin to grow older, you will also experience groaning. Groaning is what happens when you get up in the morning and all your joints kind of have gone stiff overnight, and you kind of crack your back and you bend out of bed and you put your feet on the floor and you start groaning. And that's the beginning of the day, and it gets worse as the day goes on. It's something that when you actually suffer pain, really deep, serious pain, it is difficult not to walk around moaning and groaning. My wife can't stand me groaning, and she often says to me, you know, "Don't stand there," you know, because I hold my stomach, which is where it hurts, groaning, you know. And she says, "Just go away. Groan by yourself somewhere else." You know? But that's what it's like. That is what we experience in life, that there is groaning. That experience didn't happen to me until I got to 39 years old. Up until that point, I'd never spent a day in hospital, perhaps as a baby, but that didn't count. Then I got cancer, and I spent most of 1 year in hospital, and then have been in and out of hospital continually. Various surgeons have cut me up, removed different pieces, put me back together, and they always tell me, "Now it's going to be better." And I've learned to sort of be a little bit sceptical when they promise these things. So each time you go to them, they'll say, we just need to do one more operation and you won't have any more of this pain." I said, "You said that the last time though. And that time before that as well." Well, the problem is, you see, the first surgeon, when he finished, left things, you know, and something happened and they didn't heal quite right. So we had to go in the second time to fix up what he did the first time. And now if we do it again, we'll fix it up properly. "Oh, but you'll have a bag." And so I said to him, "Well, when I'm really, really screaming in pain and rolling around on the floor, then you can do that operation. But for now, I'll just stick with small groaning. Thank you very much." Loads and loads of groaning. And that's part of what happens as our bodies age and decay. It's mortal. It is going to die. Perhaps the most surprising description is in verse 6. In verse 6, Paul says, "Therefore, we are always confident and know that as long as we are at home in the body, we are away from the Lord." I actually have never really thought deeply about that, but Paul is actually saying, as long as we are in this body, we are away from God. It's just, that is a really surprising thing when you think that the previous verse, it says, "Now it is God who has made us for this very purpose and has given us the Spirit as a deposit, guaranteeing what is to come." In other words, God has granted to us the Holy Spirit to indwell this body, and yet he says we are always confident and know that as long as we are at home in the body, we are away from the Lord. And although we live out our Christian lives in the presence of God and we know that God is watching us, that God is there at any time that I need to pray to him, and yet I am away from God. To live in this body means to be away from God. And so then he goes on in verse 8. We are confident, I say, and we would prefer to be away from the body and at home with the Lord. So to actually die, to go into the heavenly body, means to go and live in the presence of the Lord. And Paul looks at that as being something much greater than living in this present body. Now, it's more than just physical frustration. It's not that the body just grows tired and sick. It is ultimately that I am confronted with the reality of the bits that I can't fix up. There are bits that are wrong with me, and I'm not just talking about physical body. You know, there are things in our nature, the inclination to sin, the inclination to be the centre of attention, the inclination to cruelty and injustice, that are just impossible for us to get away from within this life. That those temptations will continually come to us for the whole of this life. And that at some point, as we grow older, we can truly look forward to escaping this sinful body and going into the body that is not made with hands. So this body, corrupting, it's wasting, it's groaning, it's mortal, it will die. And Paul then contrasts that with our future glorious body. So the second part, what's its nature and condition? Well, in verse 1 of chapter 5, he says, "Now we know that if the earthly tent that we live in is destroyed, we have a building from God, an eternal house in heaven, not built by human hands." Not like the tent, not something that's temporary. It's not made with hands. It's not connected to this earthly life. Although, of course, we are God's creation, even in this life. But it's an individual body that is made by God for each one of us. Now, some people read this passage and they think this is more talking about just the nature of heaven. But I think Paul is trying to use his analogy to say, no, it is the permanence in contrast to the temporary nature of this body. It is not just the place to live. It is the new resurrection body. A body that is not connected to or born in the line of Adam, that is sinful and built with destruction at its core. Its own destruction and much of that which is around it. Take it that Paul is really pushing his analogy here, that the new body will be marvelous, as each one is made deliberately by God for each one of us. And that is our heavenly dwelling, a place fit for the presence of God and to be filled with his glory. Now, it is not seen now. It is a matter of faith and hope. But it is so real that life lived in this fading, groaning body is lived in the light of the future heavenly body. Now, I don't know if you noticed it while that was being read, but I want you just to really concentrate now on the last verse of chapter 4. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but what is unseen. Now think about that for a second, how strange that is. If I told you to go and fix your eyes on something that you cannot see, how do you do that? How do you fix your eyes on something that isn't in this world even? Well, Paul is talking of the eyes of faith. He is talking about looking beyond the physical realm altogether. He is saying we fix our eyes on what is the hope of eternal glory. We fix our eyes on that which is unseen. What is seen is temporary. What is unseen is eternal. So we are in this kind of strange situation where for today we fix our physical fading eyesight on that which is unseen, which is glorious. Now, how are the two things linked? How is this body linked to the glorious body? Well, Paul tells us that there is an inward change, and that that inward change has already begun within the Christian. So go back to verse 16. He says, therefore we do not lose heart, though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. So we are being changed, we are being renewed in spirit or in heart, even if the body is failing. So although this external body is in the process of decay, and even now, as you sit here, your brain cells are dying. That's not caused by my sermon. The average person, I think beyond about age of 18 or 19, you begin losing brain cells. Brain cells are not replaceable, so your body is losing something like 10,000 brain cells every day. You find that's why people who do marvelously complicated PhDs and things inevitably do it before the age of about 25. Because after that you've lost too many brain cells to really be able to do incredibly wonderful work. You spend the rest of your life figuring it out. But you do the really, really great research, the really, really great thinking while you're very young. Gravity is compressing your spine. You could lie down, but that might incline you to go to sleep. All the joints in your body are slowly being destroyed just by living, just by existing in this world. But what Paul is saying is inside you, a glorious change can be taking place. That part of you, which is perhaps conscious part of you, the consciousness, will be changed from this body into the new body which is in heaven. So whilst the outside is crumbling, the inside is growing in beauty and strength and wisdom and godliness. And these things are the work of the Holy Spirit, which we read in verse 5, that is given as the deposit and guarantee of what is to come. The Spirit in the heart of every Christian is pushing you towards that new redeemed nature and body. Substantial healing from the effects of sin. That's what God is trying to achieve by redemption in this life. God is going to bring about a radical fix of your nature. God is going to make the greedy person to be generous. God is going to make the uncaring person to truly love. God is going to take the selfish person to learn to put others first. God is going to teach the proud humility. Slowly, bit by bit, the effects of sin are going to be wiped away. Not fully. Sadly, in this life, there is a limit to the progress that we can make, but that it can be substantial. That's a really excellent way of thinking about that complicated word, sanctification. What does sanctification mean? It means substantial healing of the person. Not of the outside, because that's wasting away, but of the inside. That the person can become a truly beautiful person. The term was in Francis Schaeffer's book, True Spirituality, and he begins to explore it in that book. Very few other writers seem to think through it as clearly as he has done. But I think it's a really great way for us to think. Now, some people, some churches will be promoting substantial healing or even complete physical healing within this life. And yet clearly God is not actually going to heal people until the day they die. In fact, I'd say that's very uncommon. For most people, you will experience the outward body fading away, wasting away. You will experience disease and illness and pain and suffering. But in some ways, those things are almost necessary for God to change the inside, for God to bring us to the point where we see beyond this outward body. And then Paul concludes with a warning. Because it can be very easy, I think, to assume, well, if this body is just fading away, it's not that important. But Paul says, actually, the life that we live in this body is still very important. And Paul presents his view, which is contrary to the popular Greek philosophical worldview at the time. Now, when you spoke to a Greek person, he would understand very well what you were talking about the outward body, the physical matter, and the inward nature. Those terms that Paul uses even are terms that come directly from Greek philosophy. They're very helpful terms, actually, because in some other cultures, it's difficult to find words that would suit to explain these things. But Paul wants to make sure you don't think the same way as the Greeks would think. You see, the little bit about being naked is very important. Chapter 5, verse 4. For while we are in this tent, we groan and are burdened, because we do not wish to be unclothed, but to be clothed with our heavenly dwelling, so that what is mortal may be swallowed up by life. If you think back to Paul's great sermon to the Areopagus in Athens, the philosophers listened to Paul right through his discussion about God and the nature of God, the nature of man, the nature of sin, up until the point where Paul talked about resurrection. And the moment Paul talked about resurrection, the Greeks said, oh, stop, We've had enough. That's not in our picture of where the future is. You see, to the Greeks, this body, this matter, was an evil thing. This body contains the essential being of the person, the inward spiritual nature. And it's the task in life to understand as much as we can of the inside part of us, the inward person. And that once we die, that the inward person is then released, the spirit can then travel and grow and develop and is no longer limited and weighed down by this physical body. To be naked, to actually escape from the body was exactly what the Greeks wanted. And Paul says, absolutely not. That is absolutely the wrong way of thinking. We don't want to be unclothed. We want to be clothed in our true heavenly body. A physical body, a real body, but not one made with hands. Not one that is sinful. Not one that is part of this world. But that is the body that God has made for us to inhabit in heaven. Now, we know very little about it. To be honest, there's just almost nothing that we can say other than that the heavenly body will be like Jesus' body in his resurrection. So Paul tells us, though, the opposite to the Greeks. And he says to the people, don't think that you're going to escape the body. And don't think that this body is unimportant. It's actually really important because you will be judged by God for the things that you do in this body. So verse 9 and 10. So we make it our goal to please him, God, whether we are at home in the body or we are away from it. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may receive what is due him for the things done while in the body, whether good or bad. So even though this body is corrupted and sinful, it is really important to God how we live it, that we are breaking free of sin, that we are being obedient to the work and purpose of God which he has for us in this life. To the Greeks, the body could be used in passion and lust and desire, and it had no impact on the interior heart of the person. In fact, the people that Paul is talking to in Corinth are known as the most licentious people in the world. When they talk about a Corinthian friend, they are talking about a prostitute. So, you know, the whole of the Greek world was kind of focused in Corinth as being the kind of height of human licentiousness. And Paul is taking these people out of that background and saying, it matters. It matters that we live before God in a way that is holy and righteous. And that carries true to us today. The Christian is contra to the world. The world lives on the basis of the body beautiful. Once you've given up having God and having an eternal spirit, then all you basically have left is this body. And so this body is really, really important to you. I'm really impressed by how older men, it seems to be a problem with older men more than anything. They had a picture in the paper a couple of days ago Dr. Eccleston and his new girlfriend. Dr. Eccleston is 71 years old. His new girlfriend is 24. Now, when I added up, she should be his granddaughter, you know? There's something, you know, you can understand that, you know? And I have to be careful that I'm not like the Pharisee. Praise God, I'm not like that other man, Steve talked about. Because that's in us, isn't it? That's part of this physical nature. And we are drawn into that direction. But is that how God wants us to live? You know, I'm impressed when I go and visit people who are old, who the body is failing, they are all wrinkled up, they are not attractive to look at or to smell, and yet these people have been substantially healed in their affliction of sin. They have had the work of the Spirit go forward in their lives. And you can see that they are now awaiting their final redemption. This is not judgment of life and death, by the way. This is judgment of rewards for what is done in the body. I try to always finish with some kind of modern illustration, and then it's kind of one of those things that, how do you think about these things? I'm a sci-fi fanatic, and I've always loved sci-fi movies because they often just make some things clearer because you can think about it outside of our world. There has been a number of movies with the title or something like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Now, I don't know if any of you have seen Invasion of the Body Snatchers. It's been remade about three times. I remember the early black and white one, which I think was still the best. And in that movie, what happens is that this alien creature from outer space arrives on Earth, and it arrives in the form of a pod. And the pod looks like a big cabbage or a watermelon. And while you're sleeping, the body snatcher takes over your body, your life. So what happens is you turn to dust. So while you're sleeping, your physical body turns to dust. And the body snatcher changes to look like you. Only it's kind of got most of your personality, but it's kind of very warped and directed. That's a fairly common theme in a lot of science fiction, by the way. There's a more recent show which some of you may have watched called Fringe. I love it. I think it's just one of those really great concept shows. In the show Fringe, there are people from another dimension who land on Earth. And they have a computer gadget. And they plug it into the mouth of the human and plug it into their mouth. And the human dies and is corrupted, and they turn into the appearance of the person whose body they take over. Only they are distinctly evil. And it's just like they pick up the mannerisms, they pick up the appearance, but their personality is just evil. And I think you could almost think of it in that way. Only it's the opposite. Instead of being evil, it's good. That there is kind of a computer link between this body and the new heavenly body. And at the end of this life, that part of you which is the part that God is building today is transferred over into that new body. And so when you die, you will wake up in heaven in a new and glorious body in the presence of God. There's lots of stuff in this passage which is exciting for theologians, and they're very unclear, and people argue about all kinds of things. But what is clear to me is that Paul expected to be absent from this body meant that he would be in the new body with Christ. We should be careful not to press exactly how that happens. But it is that great Christian hope. That is why we can see, and we are told to look towards that which is unseen. It's why we don't focus on this life. It's why we don't despair of this failing body. It's why we look by faith to God. Let me pray.